Chapter 5. Not that long after it became clear that what they had together wasn't just an awkward fling, and in fact Cardenia Wu Patrick actually had the same mix of feelings for Mars Claremont that he had for her, and in more or less the same proportions, Mars's new girlfriend, who also happened to be Emperor Greyland II of the Interdependency, gave him the first gift she would ever give him, a pocket watch. "I didn't get you anything," he said to her when she gave it to him in bed. She had, after a session of languorous sex that Mars strongly felt could have been described as actual lovemaking, reached over to a nightstand that was probably 500 years old and worth more than Mars would make in his life, and pulled out the pocket watch and told him that it was for him. "Of course you didn't give me anything," Cardenia said. "What could you give me that I don't already have?" "I mean that literally," she said after catching his look of mock hurt. "You know, I have actual warehouses full of things people give me that I never see." She held up the pocket watch. "In fact, that's where this came from."
"Your first gift to me is a re-gift?" Mars said in mock horror.
Cardenia smacked him, very lightly, on a shoulder.
"Stop that. Anyway, it's even worse than that. This wasn't even given to me. My warehouse manager tells me it was given to Huiyin III, which would make it about 200 years old."
"How did you find it?"
"I didn't. I told someone I wanted a pocket watch, and they pulled a couple dozen out of storage for me to look at."
The story is getting more horrifyingly impersonal as you go along.
"Yeah, I know,"
Cardenia said, and raised up the pocket watch slightly. "But when I saw this one, I immediately thought of you. So that makes it personal again." She handed it over to Mars. Mars took it and considered it, turning it over in his hand as he did so. The pocket watch was small but heavy for its size, which suggested to Mars that its workings were mechanical. It was a hunter-style pocket watch, with a finish that reminded Mars of pewter, although he suspected, as this had been a gift to an emperor, that the metal was something more dear than that. The engravings on both sides of the outer case were arcs of flowering vines, the centermost of which on the front was clearly a Fibonacci spiral, terminating in a stylized flower with a dozen petals. Mars opened the case to look at the watch face, which was simple and elegant. The watch chain glimmered with tiny emeralds that were set in every few links.
"This is genuinely the nicest gift I've ever been given," Mars said.
Cardenia beamed at this.
"I'm glad.
I usually get stuffed animals or fruit."
"I'll remember that for next time."
Mars felt the weight of the small object in his hand. "I'm terrified I'll drop it, or lose it, or scratch it, or something."
"That would displease your emperor," Cardenia said in a comically low tone.
"It would displease me," Mars replied. Cardenia pointed at the inside of the case.
"I had it engraved."
Mars looked over, shocked. "You engraved it? To me?"
"Well, yes, since I was giving it to you as a gift and all.
But you said it was a couple hundred years old. It probably belongs in an actual museum." Cardenia smiled and kissed Mars.
"And if it were from a museum, I could still have it engraved. And then it would become even more historically valuable, because I am emperor, which is ridiculous, but true."
She tapped the pocket watch in Mars's hand.
"Hundreds of years from now, maybe it will be in a museum, and people in the future will wonder what the inscription means."
"What did you have inscribed?"
"Read it."
Mars moved his hand slightly to angle the inside watch cover to where he could read the inscription. The inscription design matched that of the rest of the watch. If he hadn't known otherwise, Mars would have thought that it had always been there as part of the watch's original design. "To Mars Claremont, Imperial Timekeeper," it read, followed by symbols he did not recognize.
"That's Chinese," Cardenia said. "That's where on Earth the Wu family was originally from."
"What does it say?"
"It says, this is our time."
Cardenia made a face.
"Probably.
It was a machine translation, sorry." "So now I'm Imperial Timekeeper?"
"It's not an official title. But you're the one who told me what was happening with the flow. You're the one who knows better than anyone else how much time we have left before it collapses entirely. You know how much time we have left."
"That's not entirely cheerful," Mars said.
"Well, that's the public explanation," Cardenia stretched and then snuggled into Mars. "Also, you're keeping time with the Emperor. You're the Imperial timekeeper.
Mars carefully set the pocket watch onto the small table on his side of the bed. That's a terrible pun.
Yes, it is, Cardenia agreed. But as long as you get to keep time with me, do you care?
Mars did not. But Mars did think of his new, officially unofficial title in the days and weeks that followed. He thought about it as he took the data that he, his father, and the late Hatid Roinald had gathered about the collapse of the flow in the interdependency, and added to it both all the current and historical interdependency flow travel data that the Epiro had ordered be handed over to him, and the immense amount of flow data from outside the interdependency that he had been provided by Tomas Chenever, the former and late King of Pontu. The new data had given him a set a couple of orders of magnitude larger than the one he had before. This allowed him to better estimate when the long, stable set of flow streams that defined the interdependency would collapse, and when and where a new, far less stable set of flow streams, the evanescence, as he and Hatid had called it, would appear, and how long those streams would last before they too collapsed into nothingness. The more Mars worked the data, the more he realized that Cardenia, his emperor and lover, was correct. By this time, nearly every flow physicist in the hub system was working with his data set, and most of them in the other systems had at least started in on it. But none of them, save for his father and Hatid, had worked with it as long, and his father had had no new data for more than a year, and Hatid was dead. Which meant that no one else alive could see the data like him, synthesize it like he could, grasp it holistically as he was able to, and manipulate the data as well to provide the Emperor and her advisors with the best and most accurate predictions. Mars did not flatter himself into thinking this advantage was a result of his own native ability. There were dozens, if not hundreds, of flow physicists more naturally talented than he was, starting with his own father, who had been the first among them to see the flow collapse, staring out at him from the earliest data. Mars's advantage had come simply from time spent seeing and working the problem. He imagined he would be superseded soon enough. Until that time, however, he was, in fact, the Imperial timekeeper, the one person who knew, best of all, how much time the interdependency had left. And yet, the more Mars looked at the data, the more he thought he should be something more. "Look here," Mars said to Tomas Chenever, and pointed. The two of them were on Chenever's ship, the Auvergne. Mars, because he had come to value the friendship with Chenever that had been formed in duress, and Chenever, because in a sense he was the Auvergne, and it was the place he could best apparate and exist. Mars was directing Chenever's attention to a simulation of the flow streams of the interdependency over the next several years. It was highly accelerated. In it, the formerly stable flow streams glowed in blue and disappeared suddenly and permanently, while the evanescent streams flickered in and out in red. As the simulation continued, the predictive confidence of the simulation decreased, represented by the blue streams wobbling as they entered their estimated collapse window, and the red streaks fading to white the less confident the simulation was. The simulation was streaked with flickering reds, fading whites, and wobbly blues.
"What am I supposed to be looking at aside from a seizure hazard?" Chenever asked.
Mars stopped the simulation, ran it back, and started it again. "Watch the evanescent flow streams," he said. Chenever watched the simulation again, paying special attention to the red streaks and later the white ones.
"I don't know what I'm looking for," he said.
"Look again." Mars reached to run back the simulation. Chenever held up a hand.
"I could watch 1,000 times more and still not see whatever it is that you want me to see, Mars."
Mars frowned. "I thought... you, of all people."
"Me? Of all people?" Chenever smiled. "Does this have something to do with the fact that I am no longer human and exist through the good graces of this ship's computer?"
"Well, yes," Mars said.
"It doesn't work that way."
"But you run this whole ship, mostly subconsciously. You kind of are this ship, a flow space capable ship. Could you run this ship, Mars?"
"What? No. But it's a flow space capable ship, and you know all about flow space."
"Yes, but that's entirely..." "Oh, okay, I get where you're going.
I thought you might. You're smart."
Still, I would think having access to the processing of the ship would make understanding flow physics easier, Mars said.
It might, but I'd still have to take the time to learn it and incorporate it.
Chenevier tapped his virtual head.
The model of me that exists in this ship is still mostly human. It can run the ship without thinking much about it in the same way that you can breathe without mostly thinking about it. But if you want me to learn flow physics, you'll have to give me time.
How much time? Mars asked.
Probably less than you would have to give someone else, but still more time than you would think.
Chenevier motioned to the simulation.
So, in the interim, perhaps you should just tell me what I'm supposed to be seeing, rather than expecting me to see it.
That's just it, Mars said, and started the simulation again. There's something about how the evanescent streams are appearing that's bugging me, and I needed someone else to look at it to see if they see it, because whatever it is, I can't quite grasp it. It's there. I can feel it, but... Mars shrugged. Feel doesn't cut it.
There are utter flow physicists, Chenevier noted.
Mars shook his head. They're all still catching up.
As opposed to me?
Well, I overestimated you. Mars paused and then looked over to Chenevier. Sorry, that came out wrong.
Chenevier laughed at this. It came out fine. I understand you.
If Hatid were still alive, she could see it, maybe, Mars said. This is mostly based on her data.
Chenevier watched the simulation.
The evanescence streams look like they're appearing randomly to me, he said.
As far as I can tell, they are, Mars said. And their duration time is random, too. Some last for an hour, some last for almost a year.
No pattern or rhythm to it.
Not that I can see, and not that shows up in the data.
What do you feel about this? Chenevier asked. You said you feel something about it.
What I feel is that there is a pattern, Mars said. Not a pattern, exactly, but something not random about it either. He threw up his hands. I don't have words for it.
Because it's math, Chenevier suggested.
Yes, but I don't know that I have the math for it either, but...
Mars shrugged again.
I don't know! I feel like if I could figure it out, then I could buy everyone more time.
That you could stop the collapse of the flow streams.
Mars shook his head. No, not that.
He motioned to the blue lines, some wobbly, some not, all eventually disappearing.
The collapse of these flow streams is a near certainty. All we can do about those is try to predict them accurately so people can prepare. These I get, he motioned to the red and white streams. These I don't. They're the ones I'm interested in now.
Because?
Mars jabbed back at the blue lines.
Because these mean we're dead, he said. There's not enough time if these are all we have. We could commit every flow-capable spacecraft that exists right now just to getting people to end, but that would still only get a few million people there out of billions of people. Everyone else gets what happened at Dallas Isla.
Chenevier sobered at the name Dallas Isla. It was an interdependency system whose flow stream had collapsed 800 years before, stranding it and dooming the inhabitants there to a painful whittling of resources that went slow and then terrifyingly fast, killing millions.
And yet, there were some Dallas Islians who survived, he said.
A few hundred, Mars said. And they weren't doing all that well, if you recall.
I do.
There's no time here, Mars said, tilting his head toward the blue lines. If we want to save more than a few, we have to look here. He glanced toward the red. We have to find more time. I have to find it.
He looked over to Chenevier again.
And I feel like I'm missing it, whatever it is.
Maybe it's just not there, Chenevier said gently.
Maybe, Mars said. But I wouldn't be a very good scientist if I just stopped looking now.
Do you have the time for that? On top of everything else you're meant to do?
I'm the Imperial Timekeeper, Mars said. I have to try to save everyone. I guess I'll make the time.